guys, welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, El Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobspodcast.com. Hope everyone is doing great. We are also on all the streaming platforms, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher Podcast, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Android, and more. If you are listening to us on one of those streaming platforms, we would love, love, love it if you could give us some stars, show us some love, give us some feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, but we would just love to get higher up in the rankings so more and more people can find out about, hey, how'd you get that music job? Because we are all about interviewing the movers and shakers and innovators in the music industry, finding out how they did get their music jobs, what obstacles did they face, what risks did they take, what advice or insights they could share with the rest of us about where music is headed, and essentially how to become successful in music, how to have a successful music career. So go on back and listen. We have all the episodes up on the website, musicjobspodcast.com. And last episode, I had the wonderful pleasure of speaking with Brittany Spanos. She is a music writer for the iconic, the historic Rolling Stone magazine. And she's also written for other publications. She shares her career trajectory, all about being inspired by Almost Famous, which is so great that now she is actually writing for Rolling Stone. So just a great career trajectory, a great story, very inspiring. Go on back and listen to it. And this week, I have the wonderful pleasure of speaking with Justin Schmidt of Missing Piece Group. Missing Piece Group is an agency that is PR and publicity. They are digital marketing. They are a record label. They are radio promotion and so much more. So Justin is going to walk us through his career trajectory of being a musician, a songwriter, a music entrepreneur, and more. But first, I want to get started with a track that Justin wrote called Island Town. Here we go.
All those days you hide inside your mind, all those days you hide in the summertime.
Thanks for joining me on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Hey, glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Tell me about childhood. Tell me about kind of your first music memories and what you remember growing up in your household.
Oh, boy. Prehistory. Well, let's see. My parents had pretty decent, like, baby boomer music taste, I guess you could say. So, like, a lot of early memories are basically Beatles vinyl, I think, as it is for many people. They had, like, you know, some, not like a drum kit, but they're just, like, you know, drum stuff around the house and blasting, like, Meet the Beatles and giving me a drumstick to hit and, like, run around, I think was, like, an early childhood pastime, or at least a way that my parents would make me do something that they could laugh at. Yeah, so a lot of, like, classic Elvis and Beatles stuff, you know, were some of, like, the first, like, actual music that I remember hearing and being played for me and being told, like, hey, this is important stuff. So nothing particularly unique there as far as, like, those early days, but it was kind of formative.
Did you have, like, you know, you're banging around on stuff. Did you pick up any instruments or take lessons or anything like that?
Yeah, okay. So, like, the funny thing about me is my interest in music and maybe my career as itself is more of an example of, like, a slow burn kind of thing rather than any sort of early prodigy situation or revelatory moment sort of thing. So, I guess if you really want the entry point for it, it goes back to me being more of, like, a theater kid and being into acting and just, you know, doing all the musicals or dramas and what have you. I mean, like, I took piano lessons as a kid, so there's that. I was never good, never liked it, and I, to this day, like, can't really play piano. I play guitar. Jumping ahead, I didn't start guitar lessons until, like, my mid-teens, but I got into that, and that was, like, around the time when things were starting to really go in a more musical direction for me. But yeah, early on, like, I did piano lessons. I was in, you know, the middle school and high school. Well, actually, no, I was not in the high school band. I was in middle school band, and, like, I did percussion because I thought, like, maybe I would learn drums, and there was a xylophone that they let me play. That was all not particularly very exciting musical development for me. Yeah, it really was more on the theater side of things that I was getting more into it. And I guess, like, the first, like, career thought in the arts for me was to try my hand at acting and, you know, do maybe, like, you know, film acting or something like that. I never really got into that idea seriously, but I took a lot of acting classes and was in, like, every play I could be in. So kind of, like, getting on stage and having that familiarity and taking singing lessons kind of prepped me for the whole music world in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So then the story goes, you know, skip ahead a few years, past all, like, the middle school stuff. I think it was sophomore year of high school, one of my friends who, like, could kind of play guitar, play some power chords, was like, "You want to start a band, Justin? You take singing lessons, right? Like, you want to be the singer?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, whatever." Like, I wasn't, like, super popular in high school, so, like, anybody being like, "You want to do a cool thing?" I was like, "Yeah, sure." Like, cut to, like, this totally embarrassing montage of, like, high school band who can't play anything, like, banging around in some room, and me doing a very bad job of approximating my idea of, like, how to sing rock music stuff. Yeah, like, I did not do a good job of transitioning, like, operatic theater vocals into garage band style singing. That was, I think there was a videotape made at one point that I hope is destroyed. Anyways, but then I did think that the dude playing the guitar was pretty cool, and the guitar sounded interesting, and he wasn't embarrassing himself. I'm like, I think I'd like to start trying guitar out. So my dad had an old guitar that, like, barely worked, but it was just like, okay, like, let's pick this up. I found somebody to teach me some stuff, and slowly but surely throughout my teenage years, I got really focused on being a guitarist, and then started looking, you know, as I was listening to more music, started thinking more about, like, okay, this whole music world, music production, music business, it all is kind of interesting to me. So I didn't have a plan early on. I just wanted to kind of make music and, like, just do that thing that so many of us do in our teenage years.
Mm-hmm. Was a particular artist or someone in the music industry that you were like, I want to be like that in 5-10 years?
Let's see. I was in high school. I graduated 2002, a while ago. So I didn't like that was, like, the height of nu metal and stuff that I was not into. So I was listening more to, like, grunge band stuff from 10 years prior, when that was, like, at the time I felt like that was, like, the real rock music you should be listening to. I don't listen to that quite as much anymore. And also a lot of classic rock. You know, every guitarist is, like, at some point going to come across Jimi Hendrix. So I was, you know, into that in terms of a sound and taking a lot of, like, classic rock influence to what I was doing. And again, another slow burn thing, like me transitioning from, like, a more, like, rock and roll guitar towards more, like, indie rock sensibilities. And I guess, like, when I kind of got into Radiohead and more complex music, both in the classic rock era as well as, you know, what was happening then, I started thinking a little more deeply about creative choices I was making and about what sort of things I could aspire to. I was mm-hmm. also a big Jack White fan at the time, or the White Stripes fan, I should say, at the time. I've kind of mm-hmm. fallen off Jack White wagon at this point, but like, he as a contemporary of the time in terms of, like, somebody who was doing something interesting with guitar and seemed to be doing something interesting as far as a music career went, just because that was, like, the height of the, in my mind, like, the height of the anti-commercial, or maybe it wasn't the height, it was just, like, the last anti-commercial moment where, you know, talking about, like, doing stripped-down recordings and DIY promotion was like seen as like a rebel thing rather than like just something you have to do anyways. So yeah, he was a bit of a model there. But you know, this was me playing music and like writing silly songs and trying to convince other people to be in bands with me and learning about recording, like all the doing music stuff that never really became my career, but kind of provided this bedrock of knowing the basics of like, how do you write a song? How do you record a song? And getting the artist, like, I think I have a bit of an artist perspective now in terms of what I actually do in music PR, just because I was there, did work on, you know, booking shows with bands and getting albums produced and mixing and mastering and trying to self-promote a little bit. So that eventually, you know, it didn't lead me to artistic success, but it became very useful and interesting for where I am today.
When you were talking about Jack White, I was remembering I have an 8-year-old nephew, and he is learning piano and guitar and went to a recent recital, and I was cracking up because every other kid, I'm not kidding, every other kid got up and played Seven Nation Army. I was like, yeah. Is there any other song that anyone else knows? But no, it was like Jack White, Seven Nation Army. Here we go.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the influence is incredible.
My hat's off to him for his ability to kind of self-promote and become what he has, even though, I don't really keep up with his stuff now. It's kind of become more this more of a carnivalesque thing that I'm not quite as into. But at the time, I think a lot of people now like forget this about Jack White. But like at the time, 2002, right when like White Blood Cells was coming out, that album, that had like Fell in Love with a Girl on it, which is like a 100 times better than Seven Nation Army as a song, in my opinion. Like that was, for those of us who were just like listening to mainstream music, like what was on the radio, Z100, MTV, like at the time that seemed like, wow, there's like something like that's coming out that is actually going to be a little bit more dangerous and raw. And like, you know, I'm sure that was very obviously a big marketing push that was happening like parallels to the Strokes and other, and like they tried to call it like the return of rock or something. So it was all a bit of a facade, but I don't know. I like the music, and it was such a breath of fresh air from like those freaking Creed videos that kept popping up and whatever. Like I was just glad that something was in the ether that people were talking about that was popular that like didn't ever something like this. And so yeah.
Yeah. It is incredible though to kind of watch, you know, the evolution of music, et cetera, from grunge and where it meanders and where, you know, who picks it up. I mean, like I said, these 8 or 9 year olds are obviously like weren't around in 2002, but clearly it's amazing that that's the influence that they have. But getting back to you, so now you're looking at after high school, college, walk us through that. What that experience looked like with music and beyond.
So high school and college, they kind of blend together as far as the whole musical thing goes. I was still writing, recording, just kind of like, but doing a lot of listening to music, basically. Like I really, that's when you have time to listen and discover music. That's when, and you know, I think I did a good job of that. And I was trying to listen to everything I could and be a little bit of a music snob, I guess, in terms of like, oh, have you heard this record? Or, you know, kind of thing. My friends in college were very musically oriented in terms of listening, you know, like just a lot of, you know, it's the dorm room life, hanging around, listening to albums and stuff. I don't even know what, like, how college students consume music now, like, in group settings. Because it's, like, it's so easy to put on new songs now. Maybe it's totally different, but, like, the idea of sitting down and listening to an album from start to finish, you know, like, while you're, like, having a party or something, or, like, you know, just socializing, that was something that, you know, we made a habit of. That was cool to kind of like, we had our own little like circle of armchair rock critics that I would hang out with. And, you know, we just kind of like, I don't know, swap trivia about whatever we were listening to and make connections with it. So it was just on my mind a lot, and I was in a good situation to discover and get recommendations. So yeah, that period was really about like just learning more and kind of learning about how things were supposed to work. So right after college, I got like an internship with a recording studio, just because that was the first thing I could find that was music industry related. At the time, I was thinking I wanted to get more into like being an audio engineer. And I took some basic courses in that, you know, got myself a new laptop and audio interface, and just started recording myself. I tried to sort of record other people as like a freelance thing, but that didn't, I don't know, I just didn't really have the focus or skill or resources quite yet to do that. And I was still trying, you know, again, still trying to figure out what I was doing. So in the end of college, immediate post-college era, I was starting to formulate this idea for a more entrepreneurial approach to a music industry career, where I was thinking of like starting my own thing. I think the theme here is that I was sort of, I don't know if you could say I was a victim of this or was inspired by this, but just kind of wanting to do everything, but also not necessarily having a very specific focus on the one thing I wanted to do. Like, did I want to be an audio engineer? Did I want to actually try harder to have a career as a musician? Did I want to get into like the record label side of things? And that last point, the idea of a record label, became more and more interesting over the years. And as like, I found it a little less satisfying to kind of slog through trying to do the creative stuff and taking those risks and putting it out there. I always had the sneaking suspicion that perhaps I wasn't that the genius that you wish yourself could be musically, but I felt like I had a good head for a sort of like a project-oriented way of thinking about music. And I began formulating this idea for a music company. I wanted to start a record label, but I wanted, you know, it to be not a record label, you know, something more than that, like a, you know, some new breakthrough disruptive thing. And I this whole idea of what that was always this constantly evolving notion, but it did come to fruition with the creation of this company called Post Echo. And this was sort of my flag planted in the sand throughout my 20s of, you know, this is me kind of going out on a limb and trying to do something different. That there's a whole story to this Post Echo thing, and it's kind of, it's funny that we're talking now at basically its end point. Not that I'm connected with it anymore, but it existed, it developed, it went on, and it's most likely coming to a close far away from me at this point now.
I am curious to hear about, because I think, you know, music entrepreneur is such a big thing now, and I think people don't realize like there's been music entrepreneurs for a while, and I think it's really important to hear how people in the music biz, how they've started their own businesses and where, what need they saw, you know, what service did they could provide, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, Post Echo. So firstly, I was living in South Carolina of all places during this period of time. I actually met my wife in college, and you know, we dated a while, but this was now we got married kind of early, I guess, in like our mid-20s, and we went to South Carolina because she was in grad school. She got a great grad school opportunity there in Columbia, South Carolina. So that is not a music industry city. It's actually kind of, you know, far off the beaten path, but my hope and intent was to kind of harness the internet and do something digitally from there. And I thought actually it could be an interesting mm-hmm. opportunity to start a record label in an area where there may not be a big audience, but again, internet, and the fact that there weren't a lot of other people doing that down there in a particularly big way. I mean, in North Carolina and like Raleigh, Durham, there's some labels, and there were a couple labels based out of Columbia, South Carolina too. They're, you know, smaller indie kind of things, and that's what I intended to start off as, and just kind of see where it went. And also, it's, you know, every city has its music scene, whether it's hidden or not. But it's funny, the Columbia, South Carolina music scene was full of very interesting, very talented people, and there was you know, some really cool music that did come out of there, like Toro y Moi at the time was just getting big as I was moving there. I've liked all the stuff that they've done, or Chaz Bundick's done. So he was getting big right as I was kind of putting this company together. And so he was sort of a proof of concept of like, okay, you know, like stuff can catch fire down here and rock it out appropriately. So that was always the hope. So I did the company with a friend of mine who I met down there. His name's Franklin. And, you know, together we were just kind of involved in a lot of different artistic projects. And I realized that, okay, I like doing music. I wanted to have this record label idea, and I want it to be unique. Well, I was really into the idea of multimedia packages and a multimedia approach to really anything in music, and I wanted to kind of double and triple down on that concept. So I was thinking, like, okay, what we're going to try to do is really amp up the experiential aspect to any sort of music release we do. So I mentioned Radiohead before. I mean, they were always a big influence on me, but like their marketing has always been inspiring too. I mean, everybody remembers Within Rainbows, the self-release thing, which at the time was like, I guess, revolutionary in its own way. But just the way that, more than that, like the way that they would do strange things with their website, and they would really kind of tease their fan base in creative ways. I think it with their King of Limbs album, they distributed physical newspapers to newsstands throughout major cities. I mean, they were always trying what I considered to be like very interesting, almost like Banksy style anti-marketing campaigns. That it wasn't like the damn the man aspect of it that was interesting to me, but it was just like the creative thought that they put into it, which made everything have much more of a mystique to it, and that totally worked with their brand. So I was like, mm-hmm. My prediction at the time was like, oh, okay, so this is like where it's going to go. You know, everything's an MP3 now. CDs don't matter. The experience should matter. Like, you know, having these sort of immersive experiences where it's not enough to listen to the album. You want to like put together a story that, you know, that comes out in videos, and put together, you know, maybe get a video game going, or an app, or, you know, something else to tie it together. I'm not sure if my finger was really fully on the pulse with that. I feel like that has happened to a certain extent with some artists, but with others, it's been like a real back to the basics thing. But anyways, that was the kind of the model that we wanted to aspire to. I think Bjork at the time was doing really cool stuff like that as well, like releasing interactive music apps. And so what Post Echo did, we didn't have the budget for that kind of thing exactly. So what we did initially is we got a comic book that we wrote and published and based an entire musical project around. That it took a long time, and we were kind of working with other artists to basically just like get their music recorded and out there in parallel to this. But there is this comic book project called Drift, which is this really heady conceptual sci-fi story that Franklin and I put together. I kind of came to him with like real bare bones ideas of like this sci-fi concept I wanted to explore, and he's a very talented writer, so he kind of fleshed it out and, you know, wrote some actual dialogue, and together we hammered ideas back and forth. We found an artist, and we made this a musical project by releasing it with a soundtrack. The soundtrack was primarily composed of originals from the bands on Post Echo, on the label at the time. And then we had like some video stuff to go with it too. We had tried to put on different events around the area where it's like, come in, see the bands on the soundtrack perform while visuals from the comic book are projected behind them. By the way, here's the comic book and soundtrack that you can buy. Stuff like that. You know, just trying to be different and kind of get all weird about it in as exciting a way as we could. And so that kind of, at least within, you know, that immediate area, put us on the map, but not necessarily always in a good way, because we were very, very clearly trying to make that thing happen. And, the market for a conceptual space sci-fi comic book with attendant soundtrack and visual experience in Columbia, South Carolina, wasn't necessarily what people were expecting. So it was one of the challenges was kind of contending with the local scene that was growing on its own a little more organically and our relationship with that. And there was a lot that we kind of learned there about both, you know, interpersonal business and making sure that we know our audience. You know, I'm proud of having started that and like done these crazy projects. Another thing we did later on was we did was essentially like a feature-length music video that was released in five parts on YouTube. That similar thing, each part of it was orchestrated by a different artist from the label. Again, it was conceptual. It was out there and weird. It wasn't particularly mainstream visually or musically. But, you know, that's who we were. We were like, you know, going for the weirder approach because, I don't know, weird is fun.
I think that your company, I understand it's like on its way out, but my God, I think you guys are pioneers and I think it's amazing. And I kind of want you to like keep going with it because what I've been discovering, you know, interviewing people in tech and music, they're all about creating this experience for fans. You know, with music, a lot of people are talking about, you know, VR and AR, virtual reality and augmented reality. People are creating like literally like backpacks or you know, clothing that will like give you sensations while you're listening to music. Like there's, I think the trend is, in my opinion, it seems to be turning in that direction. And I think that you just are really ahead of your time. It may have been, you know, just timing and geographic location and funds and budget and the rest of it. So what do you think about that? Like, what do you think about bringing it to more of a virtual landscape versus a like brick and mortar physical landscape? What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, thank you. I will address that. I should point out that like my current role, which I'm very happy in, by the way, the end of the story is I'm currently a publicist at Missing Piece Group, and I have taken a lot of those lessons and that sort of, you know, to the extent that I can be forward thinking or at least understand the importance of trying to be forward thinking, you know, a lot of that has kind of worked into what I do now. And don't cry for Post Echo. Missing Piece Group, the company I work for, is a, you know, fantastic music company, and I we'll get to that too. But yeah, I think that at the time things didn't turn out the way they did because we were ahead of our time. I think there were a lot of those structural issues that you mentioned that kind of made it not work. I also think that, you know, I was reading a lot of like articles and a few books about entrepreneurialism at the time, and one of the most common phrases in these things you read is like a founder says something like, "Yeah, we had this idea. We had no idea what we were doing, but we just jumped into it, and you know, we made changes as we went, and it all worked out." Well, I wonder how these people, if they really didn't know what they were doing, because I did not know what I was doing, and I was just jumping in, and we were just throwing things against the wall. And so, point of advice, have a little bit of an idea of what you're doing. But anyways, yeah, I you know, you mentioned VR. That was something that we always were like, is there any way we could do a VR thing? We just didn't have the resources for it, or really even that great a concept to go with it right now. To go with it at the time. And, you know, right now the company actually has transformed, it transforms a bit into more of a PR company after I left it. It's still existing. It's going through a period of transition. I'm not quite sure where things will end up. I'm not personally connected with it anymore. But the idea of a company that releases music or at least invests in music, or entertainment properties, even for that matter, you could say TV, film, video games, and pursues an integrative multimedia approach to putting these products out that generates a fan base because it appeals to a consistent niche and has like, you know, unique experiences that are experimental. I think that if that company doesn't exist and isn't already successful, and I'm not aware of it yet right now, I think that that is something that is going to happen at some point. I mean, I think the idea is a solid idea. It's just inherently risky and inherently experimental, and it's got to be something that catches fire. I think that a lot of artists and companies dip their toe into these sort of things, and you know, they'll release a 360 video, or they'll release a video game, or they'll, you know, all these things happen now, and so that's cool, and I do feel like I, you know, a little vindicated that, like, that's kind of the norm. Though I don't see it quite out there in the same sort of consistent way. I feel like when artists do it, it's like a one-off thing. Like, I'd love an artist to, like, put out a video game and then put out sequels to it or something, where it's like, you know, that follows their musical trajectory. Or they put out VR experience, and it's not, like, just this one-off, immerse yourself in this environment for 10 minutes and then don't do it again ever. I mean, I applaud everything that's happening out there. And I'm only saying this because I guess I'm always like trying to like push for like what more can happen? What more can there be? I feel like we're so close but have not yet hit like that moment of that one amazing experience or product that really sets the tempo for how this stuff is supposed to go. I don't know what like the Sgt. Pepper's of multimedia VR music experiences is. I don't think that's come out there yet. I think, you know, it might happen next year. It could happen at some point really soon. I think there's so much cool stuff right now. Maybe it's the lack of the monoculture or the fact that things are siloed into different industries and they really need to be marketed so specifically. Actually, I think that's the reason. But I would love for those barriers to come down and some sort of new experiential model of music to be developed and put out there. And that's always on my mind, you know, mm-hmm. those are the sort of things in PR and publicity that I get most excited about working on when I can. The flip side to that is that you see that unless something really catches, it kind of doesn't catch. But that I've got my eyes open for it. I'm hoping to catch whatever wave it is when it starts to crest. Because I do think that there's always going to be a hunger for more newer ways of consuming media in ways that, like, you know, our parents didn't, that make us cooler.
Yeah, I mean, I really do feel like we're trending more and more in that direction. I had a previous podcast about Airbnb Music, which just launched in February, and they're all about creating music experiences for fans in various sort of unorthodox or unusual brick and mortar places, basically hosted by either artists or fans. But again, it's about creating this immersive experience, very intimate experience for music lovers. And I just think of like where that could go. And I also see the fact that you have this theater background and performing arts interest and early interest and background that I think that that's part of it. And from what I've heard, and I hope you can expand on this, but it's everybody wants to know more about the artist. What's the story? What's the hook? What is it about? Why did this artist write this music? Or why does this artist use this particular fashion style or cover art or that type of thing? So I'm hoping you can speak more to that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the artist's story. That, to me, is so central to everything that I do in music currently now and I'm interested in. So as a publicist, you have different assets to work with to try and get attention from the media and line up media opportunities, album reviews, interviews, tour press, TV appearances. You know, everything starts with the music. The music's got to be good. That's great. But if that's all there is, no story. The artist has to be, there has to be a sign of life towards this artist's career. You know, there should be something interesting about what they're doing. They should, you know, whether they're on tour, whether they've got an interesting release schedule, whether they've got a press history already. That's a little bit of a story. But really, more and more, especially with like a deep dive interviews and profile features, what is so essential is the artist has to be interesting in a way that is both unique and authentic, essentially. You know, that you can't just like put on a mask and like jump around, and it's like, oh, that's his thing, that's the story. You know, there's got to be something either in the biography of the artist or their latest project or just their whole persona and almost first impression sort of thing. There has to be something there that functions as that hook, that media hook, whether it's the writers or the writers knowing that the audience is going to respond to it. You know, I'm not going to necessarily get name names about campaigns I've worked on just because I don't want to say this person was like great or this person was not, but I will just say that that's such a clear barometer, the story, such a clear barometer of success for a campaign of whether there's a good story here that's like worth talking about with different points of reference and different colorful ways of interacting with it and thinking about it versus there not being that. And, you know, if it's just artist from town releases album, album is good, but that's it. That's kind of all you're going to get from it from a press side. So I think that the more, just as advice to artists, you know, the more that you can find the creative aspect of yourself that you like most about it, about what you do, and kind of just amplifying that is the best way to go. It's definitely not about finding like a gimmick or something. I mean, it has to be something that, you know, you are genuinely taking on as true to your identity, true to your interests, and just like really magnifying it, finding every way you can to make it, you know, your thing prominent. And I love working with artists who know who they are, who have that well defined, and really want to just like, you know, broadcast that, because then it's a clear path, it's a clearer conversation about why people should care, what's cool, what's going on, what's up with this artist.
I know you don't want to name names, but is it possible to just give us an example of a successful campaign where somebody's story really stood out?
Greyhounds was that band. You know, they put out an album, and, you know, their whole thing, other than being good musicians, which is like, again, bedrock, necessary, but not a story, like they're you know, musical men about town in Austin. They've got their own studio. They know basically all the musicians in the city, but they're also kind of characters. Like they ride horses on the street to get to the studio sometimes. Not to like, you know, to flip people off or like, just, you know, be strange for its own sake, but like, you know, it's who they are, you know, they're living the life, and that comes out in their songs, it comes out in the way they dress, and that resonated. And so like the Austin Chronicle did a story with them that we set up where it's like, come out and ride horses with them, or I should say it was a mule, but you know, come out and ride with them, and like, you know, like soak in their personality as they're in their element. And that's like, I still think like the best kind of artist profile situation is to put people in a scenario together that makes sense, and kind of let the writer observe them in their natural habitat. Another story. Is this group I'm working with currently, the Band of Heathens. They recorded, or I should say re-recorded, a Ray Charles album from 1972. It was called The Message from the People, and the Band of Heathens' new album is A Message from the People Revisited. And it's a bit of a socio-political statement, might be a bit of a harsh word, but it's an exploration of the fact that the songs at the time that Ray sang was speaking to a lot of political divisiveness and ills in the country that, you know, we're still facing today. So they felt it was incumbent on them to bring these songs back to the people, because that album's out of print. And that's a story that, you know, is currently, I'm working on it right now. It's out there. And that speaks to their identity as, you know, they're roots musicians, and they're in touch with, you know, American roots history. And as a group, you know, their genre kind of spans everything from country to straight up rock and Americana, and, you know, a little bit of the almost some of the jam band mentality, in the sense that they're a phenomenal live group. So the whole thing kind of works with their identity, and, you know, they've reinterpreted those songs in a way that is interesting to their fans, and it's a new take on it. And I think that goes beyond just like, you know, being an artist and making a political statement. I think it's not like a protest album per se. It's a thoughtful choice that they've made that speaks to the times we're in, speaks to their, you know, where they are as an artist. And, you know, for that reason, almost because it has a measure of subtlety and reverence for American musical history in it, that really speaks to who they are as a band and kind of reinforces that experience that their fans have when they come to the shows. So it's not like, again, it's not like you have to take on some persona or something. It your own story is reflected in the ideas that you put out there, and whether or not they are a genuine reflection of what your personal inspiration is at the time. I think, you know, in their case, it's quite genuine. And we've, you know, gotten good response as a result of that. So, yeah, I mean, examples are very varied, and they could be all-encompassing or very simple like that. They could be something that spans the whole artist's career and identity, or it can be, you know, the story about one particular project that they're doing. But, yeah, I love talking about that because there's something to talk about other than, like, oh yeah, this song has a nice melody. I sure hope the songs have a nice melody. They, you know, that's just the bread and butter.
I think it's also really interesting too. There's a lot of pressure, I think, today. I guess it always has been in the music industry, but you see sort of a very narrow funnel at the top, say, you know, like in pop or something. There's only a few select artists, and so as a result, some artists feel pressured to sound more like fill in the blank. And I think with like sync opportunities, it you know, the pressure gets on there as well. Like, we need an artist who sounds like Taylor Swift. So there's kind of this push to not be authentic, to sound like everybody else, to conform to whatever happens to be hot right now. And I love the fact that you're putting forth that no, there is a hunger for authenticity. There's a hunger for a real genuine story, a concept that, you know, is yours and yours alone, that you've brought forth into the world. And like you said, that you've put forth in the ideas that you're putting out there, and that really does still resonate.
Yeah. And, you know, if it isn't clear by now, I get deep into my own rabbit hole of conceptual thought about all this stuff. So I kind of enjoy it on that high-minded level. But, you know, I try to self-correct myself a lot, too, and recognize that, like, just because, like, something isn't, like, a walking concept album doesn't mean there aren't ideas there. And also there's different mediums that ideas can be presented in. So, for example, like, you know, social media, Instagram and Snapchat, which, you know, that is its whole ecosystem of communication that sort of lends itself to a different kind of storytelling. And I think to a lot of people, myself included at times, like, it can look a little more vapid or a little sillier, but I wouldn't discount it as a meaningful way of reaching people in ways that are genuine. I think it's important to separate, like, the idea of, like, a materialist sort of thing, meaning, like, how does something look, like, where Is it cool looking and that sort of thing? Does it have the right vibe? A materialist sort of approach, as opposed to like a cynical sort of approach, where it's like somebody might be trying to literally sound like someone else, and that's unfortunate. But we kind of live in a materialist time. We always have, but like social media, I think, emphasizes things that we might feel a little queasy about being values, you know, making like momentary impacts, first impressions, you know, look at the shiny object. I think the detriments to that are obvious, but I try not to be too much of an old fart about it. And in the sense that this stuff is popular for a reason. I don't believe that people are brainwashed into going onto Facebook or whatever. You know, there's a whole lot of controversy in social media now, and I think a lot of it is very legitimate. But, you know, I'm thinking with my publicist hat on, this is a big world, a big country, lots of people. You know, you have to think about the masses if you want to reach the masses. And for that matter, too, it doesn't, you know, certain artists, there's nothing wrong with an artist wanting to do something that only, you know, they feel they have to do, and it therefore will only reach a certain segment, or could only reach a certain segment of people. Or an artist feeling like their call is to reach a wide audience. I think that that is a perfectly legitimate source of inspiration, and to feel like you want to do something that people, lots of people, are going to like. As long as you're enjoying it, and by enjoying, I mean getting the music that you're putting out, and not like, hard to explain, but like, you know, certain artists, SoundCloud artists randomly, they don't pass the sniff test for their genre, because like you can tell, like, well, they're, you know, they need to practice more, or they need to really understand this genre that they're working in before they get to the next level. But for people, like, if you want to make a unapologetic pop album that is just, you know, not trying to change the world, not trying to do anything conceptual, but you just want people to move to this album or you know, enjoy it, and, or, you know, sing along to the silly chorus, go for it. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think, you know, we live in a poptimist time, so I'm not really saying anything that controversial here, but I think it's important to recognize that as far as storytelling goes, as far as fan connection goes, as far as things that are good in music, ain't nothing wrong with trying to cast a wide net in terms of who you're going to reach. I think there's a lot of good there.
Those are great points, and I appreciate you talking about that and helping me clarify my point too. So we're running out of time, but I wanted people to know, how do they get in touch with you? How do they get in touch with Missing Piece? If you can share social media, the dreaded social media, or just contact information.
Sure. Well, yeah. Once again, Missing Piece Group is the company I work for. We're primarily a publicity company, but we do a lot of other work. We do digital marketing. We manage a number of artists, and occasionally we do releases when we want to. We transform into a record label temporarily. So we've got a great team, and they're based in San Diego, the New York area. I myself am in Seattle. I am the Seattle office.
Nice.
But yeah, anyways, missingpeacegroup.com is the website. You can check it out and see who we're working with, and you can contact us generally there. If anybody wants to talk to me personally, I'm justin@missingpeacegroup.com, and, you know, happy to connect that way. I should also just give a minor plug for my own podcast, if that's not totally inappropriate.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, this is a newer thing I'm doing. I started a podcast called The Abstract, and you can, you know, type in The Abstract to your podcast app and find it. Website is abstractpodcast.com. And this is me just talking to whoever I can who is a creative personality with something creative to say, and just sort of having fun with it. But also, it's a great way for me to kind of keep everything we're talking about with terms of storytelling and creative energy. It's a great way for me to keep my eyes out for what's new, and kind of, I enjoy the conversational aspect of it. It kind of helps me keep my vocabulary up to date and make sure that I can effectively interact with humans. I don't know. I'm not sure how successful it is. People can tune in and tell me if I sound like a successful human interactor. But yeah, no, we're always open, in this Peace Group, we're always open to, you know, considering other artists to work with in terms of getting their message out there, getting new music the recognition it deserves in the press. And we, at the end of the day, are connectors. I think that's to put a nice little bow on where I am career-wise, since I guess we're, you know, ultimately talking about career here. I feel like I found a good role for myself as a connector of people in the music industry. Even if these connections are just temporary, connecting a writer with a musician to produce a review or a feature of some sort, or more long term, you know, connecting some of those relationships kind of blossom naturally over time, and working with our management clients to connect them with brands and companies on occasion. Connection is, you know, it's a currency that I'm very happy to traffic in, and the music industry has more than enough things to be frustrated and depressed about and get down on about. But there's something about putting people together who can do something mutually beneficial that's always positive, and that's why I'm happy to go to work every day.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Justin. I so appreciate you having you on the show.
Well, thanks so much. Glad we got to talk. And We'll see you around.
Again, very grateful to Justin for taking the time to be on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? And again, it's Missing Piece Group is the name of the agency. MissingPieceGroup.com is the website. You can reach Justin at MissingPieceGroup.com. And again, his podcast is called The Abstract, or you can find it at abstractpodcast.com. So babies, thus ends another week of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? Thank you as always for being part of this wonderful journey. We are on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram at Music Jobs Podcast. We're going to be rolling out a new feature. So if you are a music intern, if you are just starting out in your music career, you're just getting started learning about the biz, we want to hear from you. We want to feature you. Please email at info@musicjobspodcast.com. That's again, musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. We want to hear from you. We want to feature you. So if you are someone starting out or you know someone starting out, say you've got an intern in your office, please pass along the information. Again, we want to feature you. We want to highlight you as the up and coming, the next big thing. So babies, I am L Ariel. You can find me also on social media at L-A-R-I-E-L Music. My website is lariel-music.com. That's lariel-music.com. I have a show. My goodness, finally, I have a show this week, not this week, the end of this month, the end of October, the 28th at the Mint in West LA. Would love, love, love to see you there. It's going to be fun. I'm going to be dressing up in my usual 80s paraphernalia. You can also dress up for Halloween. You know I would love that so much. But again, come on out. All the information is on lariel-music.com. Okay, baby, so take good care. Have a wonderful week. Stay spooky. I love that. And again, keep on hustling, keep pursuing that dream, and don't you dare give up.